Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a journalist of environment, food, health, policy, and science, connecting the dots between all of the different things in our world that affect our well-being, the well-being of our communities, the health versus complete insanity of our society, and the implications of all of that for our ecological system and future survival here on planet Earth. That's stating it a little bit more baldly than I usually do on over the many years that I've done some version of that intro on this now 7-year-long radio show. And that's because, you know, we really have trotted along from kind of gently trying to waken people to some of the imperatives of our time to an epoch where, you know, having so far been retarded in our attempts to address them, it becomes more and more and more serious, and therefore the warnings, the concerns, the actions, and the critical thinking about what's happening in our world become more pointed and more necessary. To that end, every week on this show, you know, I've had like a terrific array of thought leaders, activists, advocacy people, documentarians, book authors, scientists. Today we have a returning guest who I think is just one of the brightest, smartest, most insightful, fun to listen to, engaging social critics we have, as you know, as well as a blogger and a radio show host herself, and that is Katie Halper, who's here with me today. She has her own radio program. She's been a guest on this show before. I adore her work and follow her on a radio show where she recently had Glenn Greenwald, on Twitter, on Facebook, wherever, you know, and on the numerous places that she publishes her incredibly astute and nuanced blogs. And it's always, you know, a total pleasure. And I'm delighted to have you here with us today on Connect the Dots, Katie. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we are talking at a super fun time. Let me just tell everyone a little bit more about you. You have such an incredibly rich background. You're a comic, a writer, a blogger, a satirist, and a filmmaker yourself, with a very rich history as a performer, as a writer, as a producer, as an interviewer, and people can, of course, listen to your terrific show, The Katie Halper Show, on WBAI-FM, which week after week just, you know, delivers terrific programming. So thrilled that you're here today. And, of course, we're right in the jaws of the beast right now, because we are not at one of these moments in the news cycle where we can go, oh, step by step, we're moving along slowly. We're at, you know, one of these kind of high action, approaching the election with everything up for discussion moments. And so it's ripe for the kind of analysis that you're so gifted at. So let's get to it. And just to contextualize this for anyone listening to the program after its live date and into the future, we're talking in just a day or so past the second presidential debate of the 2016 presidential election. And in that debate, the two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, spoke in the immediate aftermath of revelations this past the prior weekend about Donald Trump's sexually abusive behavior and language in an incident that was brought to light by the Washington Post. And, you know, I happened to be, as I often am, online at the moment that all of that hit, and it hit literally concurrently with a long-awaited leak from WikiLeaks, from Julian Assange, what the long-anticipated October surprise hit, you know, within moments. The two things hit together. Within an hour, those two things happened concurrently. So we have a kind of nexus of of different things that are up in public awareness that we'll be discussing today. So let's see, where should we begin? Do you want to, you know, back up and talk about the, you know, the revelations of abuse and what, you know, they do to the conversation about the campaign? You know, one thing that I've heard some people, you know, kind of saying, well, at last it's out. People are talking about it. The rape culture issue is right on the table. Misogyny is now a matter of public discussion rather than constant private complaint. And, you know, this really reveals the zenith candidacy of Donald Trump, as well as perhaps can in some way be healing, you know, to these horrible cruelties and inequities and, you know, that are sort of so built into the fabric and weave of our culture and society. So, you know, what's your take on the revelations?
Well, so starting with the Trump ones or
With the Trump okay ones, let's start with those because that's kind of been primary in people's minds for good
right
or ill.
For better or for worse. Exactly. Yeah. For worse, we say. I think that, well, something that I always joke about and has become kind of a theme for me, and of course I'm being sarcastic, but still lends itself to, I think, some kind of useful absurd reading of reality, is this idea that Trump comes off as someone who's like a real lefty, really woke. I don't know if you know this term. Woke.
Mm-hmm.
Woke is like politically conscious, and it's usually mm-hmm used sarcastically to make fun of people who are trying too hard. But it started out as a little, and you know, it was used literally at the beginning. So, you know, if someone was like said LGBTQ, right, that was woke, as opposed to just saying lesbian and gay, right? Like, oh, that's really
mm-hmm
woke. He's woke, you know, he knows all that stuff, or he always invites, you know, make sure that there's a person of color on the panels because he's woke like that, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep thinking that there's a woke Trump out there, because he actually did say, I don't know if you remember this, but during the RNC, he actually said LGBTQ. He added that Q at the last minute. And my friend was there and close enough to see the teleprompter, and it actually didn't even have the Q on it, which is kind of funny, I mean, when you think about it, that he's, like, in some ways more woke than, you know, Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, he said the most, like, cynical thing ever, because this was back in Cleveland at the RNC, and he was saying how much he cared about the LGBTQ communities, and then he used that as a justification to basically ban Muslims, you know, because then he said, that's why I'm going to protect you from a hateful foreign ideology, and this was right after the Orlando shooting. So,
oh, God,
moment, you know, how he harnessed, like, LGBTQ rights in order to try to deprive Muslims or people of, you know, Islamic background. You know,
yeah, it's like the Trump give us and the Trump take us away. So with one
hand, he's
being, you know, beyond progressive and cool, and with the other, he's being beyond reactionary and heinous.
Exactly.
And he somehow yokes them together in the same, you know, sauce. It's quite something.
Right.
Yeah.
And then all the people are clapping, and of course I'm pretty sure they're clapping about the kicking the Muslims out thing. But then he says, you know, like, oh, it's let me just say it. It's so great to hear you clapping at a Republican national convention. And, of course, Trump's not really Republican. I think he was probably really a racist, but Democrat. I think, I mean, not Dixiecrat, but I think he was a pretty, like, bigoted, you know, protectionist in terms of economic policies, Democrat. And I don't, you know, that we can get into this. I don't think he's anti-choice. I think he picked that up. And but the thing about Trump is he just lays bare all the stuff that Republicans are or think or do. He just takes off the mask and the kind of civil coating that they put on it, which is
mm-hmm
why I find the whole, like, all these Republicans condemning him. I mean, it's, I don't know which is worse. So I don't know if, I mean, we can talk about it, but basically on these tapes, he described how women, when you're a star, will let you do whatever you want. And you can grab them by the PU
mm-hmm
blank blank Y, and so of course that people are horrified by that. And of course, what's interesting is that you linked it to sexual assault, which of course it is. If it's I mean, I just realized talking about it now, in theory, I guess, it's if they let you, I don't know, but it's a sexual, there's a potentially, definitely potential lack of consent, right? Because
mm-hmm.
he's saying that they let you do it, but how do you know if the way that you find out is that you do it without asking? Anyway, it's very problematic, so to speak. But, of course, what the Republicans are upset about is just that he used that word, or just that he, like, you know, was hitting on or trying to sleep with married people. So it's just a moralism thing for them, as usual. It's not even about the sexual assault. And I think that, you know, you have someone like Jason Chaffetz, who is from Utah, who mm-hmm. comes out and says how terrible Trump is. And he's a guy who, and I don't know why people don't remember this more or talk about this more, but he is a congressman from Utah. And he was, he's the chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. And he was questioning Cecile Richardson of Planned Parenthood about, remember they were trying to defund it, like, you know, mm-hmm. defund Planned Parenthood after these fake
right.
videos were leaked that made it seem like they were doing things that they don't do. And he's questioning Cecile Richardson, and he's asking her about, you know, oh, I thought you do mammograms, but look, you don't do mammograms. And she's like, no, we don't do mammograms. We do breast screenings. We do screenings for breast cancer, and then they go and get a mammogram, blah blah blah. And then he shows her this slide, and he's like, can you explain this? And she's like, well, I've never seen the slide, so let me take a look at it. He's like, oh, I just made it, putting in the information from your reports. And then someone comes up to Cecile Richardson and says something in her ear, and she goes, oh, sorry, our lawyer just informed me that this is from a pro-life organization, so you should check your sources. Sorry, I was saying Cecile Richardson. It's Cecile Richards. I always get that name wrong. You can cut out the sun or something. And that was just, like, deplorable, because, first of all, he was trying to shut down Planned Parenthood, which spends 3% of its budget on abortions,
mm-hmm.
and the 97% of it on everything else, including breast cancer screenings and, you know, like treating UTIs, of course, contraception, but they're against that too, probably. But he lied. I mean, he lied. He pretended that this slide that he made it up, and it's even more embarrassing that he would pretend that when it was, like, not even accurate. It's like cheating off of someone's bad homework,
mm-hmm.
or cheating off of someone's bad test. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
so to hear this guy, I mean, I can't stand when he tries to take a moral high ground, because this is a guy who lied in front of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
and plagiarized, and no one says anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and then, I mean, I was going through the other ones. One of them had another person who condemned Trump. It's someone who's retired, but he, you know, I don't care, but he had an affair with a woman, or textually, like, sexually explicit texts he sent them to her. And again, I don't care about what you do in your private life if it's consensual, but these are people
mm-hmm.
who do care about, you know, legislating people's personal lives. Anyway, but...
You know what
strikes me about
the way you drill into this in detail, and also the way that, having attended the RNC, you kind of really get into the nuance of analyzing, you know, what Trump is up to, and I'm really
mm-hmm.
struck by that, and, you know, for several reasons. One is, I mean, you know, one reason is that, you know, you and I are almost like a polarity around Trump, because I basically made the decision I am not going to follow or drill into or be horrified or appalled or traumatized or frightened or terrorized or whatever by the by what he says or whatever implications there are, because, you know, being from New York, which we both are, right, you know, my
mm-hmm.
perspective is I don't know the nuance of his every position the way you do, but I know overall, you know, what his style of a sort of bluster and blame you know, outrageousness, lack of decorum, you know,
sure.
A lack of command of the issues and all the rest of it, and professional history, you know, would mean in terms of this is really not a relevant, if he, you know, he didn't, oh my goodness, the cats are going crazy here. This is not really a relevant candidate in a certain sense. And my initial gut feeling is I know who he is, and he's being foisted upon us. And I basically had that reaction from the get-go, from the minute his candidacy emerged. At the same time, and coming from the New York terrain, that sense, what I'm hearing from you, is also a sense of, you know, he's a skunk, but he's kind of a familiar skunk from a, you know, a kind of world that as New Yorkers, you know, we're more exposed to or familiar with, so that the, you know, the complete kind of horror, the sense of his, you know, worst side potential, the sense that, you know, of realism around how far he might go as a candidate is a little, or a sense of context about him. The fact that, for example, you know, the Trumps and the Clintons are friends who would, you know,
sure.
You know, they would know each other. They'd be part of the same New York social set. The fact that they are, you know, sworn
friends,
enemies.
Yeah,
they're, you know, all of that would be just part of our context. So we both, you know, and what I'm hearing in you is this kind of sense of deep analysis of his positions and the ability to kind of watch him closely and look at all of the inconsistencies, you know, without being, you know, just sheer terrorized,
right.
You know.
I mean, I think
it's very useful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that when we totally, like, when he's portrayed as this total anomaly, I mean, he's an anomaly in that he doesn't respect decorum. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's not, I don't like that, but I think that it makes it easy to pretend that he's something that he's not. I mean, I think he's, my problem is that I think he's a horrible person and would be a horrible politician. I just think lots of people are that, but
mm-hmm.
they just speak nicely. So I have no problem with, you know, criticizing him. And obviously we have to. I think he's a terrible person, would make terrible decisions. You know, I mean, at the very least, sometimes some people on the left, they get kind of skeptical about, oh, are they really all that different? I mean, at the very least, having him in office would lead to an increase in hate crimes, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
because of his bigoted
mm-hmm.
speech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's weird and why I do pay attention to his policies is because I think it's really useful on one level, if nothing else, just to, like, kind of see what happens, how Democrats respond to this. And the fact that you have, you know, Obama, like, for the TPP and Trump not for the TPP and Bernie not for the TPP, it's just one of these reminders of how, you know, like, you know, that there's some, it's a great example to me of how we have to, people who like Clinton, people who are pro-Clinton, they should want to move her to the left. And Bernie Sanders
mm-hmm.
really helped her in this election. There's no doubt in my mind that he helped her. And, you know, that to me is just an example of one of these things where, people get alienated. I mean, last night at the debate, when Hillary Clinton said something about, you know, Donald Trump wants to make America great again, but I think this country is great. But that's like not actually a very good talking point. I get it because they want to distinguish themselves from Donald Trump. And, of course, Donald Trump's making America great again has really racist, xenophobic connotations. And everyone knows
mm-hmm.
that. But the problem with the Democrats is that they refuse to kind of acknowledge people's suffering. I think partly it's awkward because Obama was president for the past 8 years, so it's a bit
mm-hmm.
awkward to do that. Of course, you can easily do that, and if people were smart, they'd blame corporations like Bernie Sanders did. But it should be noted also that, of course, Bill Clinton, who is I honestly don't know if he's being cynical or if he's just kind of lost it, but he did recently say, you know, that Obamacare is terrible. He also blamed Bernie Sanders for something, and he, during the primary, said that something that Hillary would help, you know, help work, take the, you know, help the country recover after the awful legacy of the past 8 years, which, at best, was a big faux pas. But at worst, was probably a coded kind of, I mean, he's so smart that, and he's so cynical, and he uses, picks every word so carefully that lots of people did think that that was kind of a coded attack on Obama, that to appeal to kind of racist,
and
resentful, yeah.
Of course, it would appeal to racists,
yeah.
It would appeal to Republicans,
right.
And, you know, I mean, he was heard to say, and you know, when he didn't know the microphone was on back during the, you know, the prior 2008 campaign, in another situation, Obama would be carrying our bags. I mean, you know,
yeah,
so
he wasn't
all of the,
heard, apparently, you know. That story is that, Ted Kennedy, he said that to Ted Kennedy. It wasn't actually on a tape, but it was told.
Mm-hmm.
It was told to Mark Halperin. I mean, I'm sure it happened. I don't think that Ted Kennedy made it up. And apparently, that was one of the things that made him endorse Obama over Hillary,
mm-hmm.
or made
mm-hmm.
him like double down. I can't remember. He had already decided. But yeah, he said that, and you know, he said that he accused the Obama campaign of playing the race card. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was. Basically, he compared Obama to Jesse Jackson. And to give him the benefit of the doubt, he was comparing that they both did well in South Carolina, but then they lost and get the nomination, or Jesse Jackson
mm-hmm.
didn't. And he was hoping that Obama won, obviously, and that was his point. But it was a weird thing to compare them. But fine, we'll give him a pass on that. But he was asked about the comments and whether they were a mistake. He said, no, they weren't a mistake because the campaign played the race card on me. And then the next day, literally the day after, someone asked him what he meant when he said that they played the race card. And he said, when did I say that? And to whom did I say that? And they're like, yesterday on the radio. And he's like, no. See, you're trying to get me to play your game. I mean, he lies about everything. And he's, yeah. I mean, they both race bait, a Muslim baited. And then we see from the first round of Guccifer, you know, the first leaks that someone
mm-hmm.
in her campaign was figuring out how to play up Bernie Sanders' atheism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
Yes, I do remember that. Yep,
yeah.
I sure do.
It's hard to keep track of this.
I mean,
yeah.
Let's just take a step back and do, you know, some further contextualization of the leaks, because, you know, all along, Bernie Sanders did, you know, I mean, it was anywhere from phenomenally well to potentially even winning the nomination, but in a rigged election where then he didn't win it.
Right.
You know, but all along what we had seen and that what was visible and 100% known to everyone that is not enthralled and only getting their news from the mainstream media is the fact that, you know, Sanders did it in a media blackout. I mean, you know, he got very little airtime. It was treated like he wasn't even running when in state after state after state, you know, huge crowds were gathering. You know, it was like the Pied Piper. He was, you know, sweeping these states unexpectedly once it got out of this, you know, the deep south with the black loyalty to the Clintons, ironically, loyalty. You know, all of that was happening with election fraud, you know, kind of, and you know, voter suppression kind of nipping at the heels of that whole thing, and a certain, you know, naivete on his part or unfamiliarity to really know that that was happening and really, you know, to believe and get others believing and creating this tremendous momentum, you know, with along with the media blackout that, you know, the Democratic National Committee kind of shooting at his heels the whole time. And, of course, Sanders supporters, which, you know, were significant millions of people, 13 million people, I don't remember what the final figure was, were observing all of this. But other people were like, you know, this all along there's been kind of this split with, you know, one sizable group of people more widely informed, not in need of doing their research outside the mainstream narrative, you know, with a completely different narrative claiming these things are going on. And, you know, other people going, oh, well, that's just normal. What do you mean? It couldn't be happening, not wanting to hear about it. All the way from the media blackout to a rigged election to the, you know, DNC involvement. And so in the minute, you know, that the Assange WikiLeaks with the DNC, you know, that showed the clear bias in the DNC and sabotage of the Sanders campaign, which studies have shown really affected the outcome.
Right.
You know, there was all this denial about it, and the minute it's revealed, suddenly it's the Russians, you know, becomes the new spin.
Oh, yeah, that is just an embarrassment. Because what's so embarrassing about the Russia thing is that, I mean, at least deny that they're real. They're not, though. Because, like, I assume it's just too verifiable. I assume that, like, whoever leaked them has access mm-hmm. to something that they could show, and you would, you know, somehow so the world would realize. Because they're, for the most part, not denying them, but they're just saying the
right.
Russians are doing it. And you
right.
get, like, Brian Fallon, who is just a, I mean, God, he, this guy is so awful. He works in her press, he's like press
mm-hmm.
or communications.
Yeah.
This is a guy who literally, like, compared, like, oh, well, how come George Bush wasn't asked these questions? And it's like, you're really going to use the example of George Bush? Wasn't the takeaway from that whole Iraq war that the press was not diligent enough? And they just be like, I mean, why that? Or he would mention things that Bush did, too. Why are you upset about that? It's like, because Bush was a right-wing Republican, remember? Like, we're not supposed to expect the same things from him and Hillary. But he had this stupid thing about, like, oh, you know, like, look at the people are so interested in the leaks without even thinking about the poisonous, like, the fruits of the reading the fruits of this Russian foreign hacking. I mean, they're constantly talking about foreign government, foreign this,
mm-hmm.
Russia, and he even
mm-hmm.
says, like, you're making the Russians happy. Or you're doing what the Russians want. I mean, it's such old school Cold War language. And of course,
totally.
It has nothing to do. Yeah, and it has nothing to do with the Russians. I mean, they're saying that because they know that they can't really deny what's in there. So instead, they're trying to play this. And of course, the Clintons have done all sorts of stuff with Russia.
Well, here, let's pause on this for a moment, because that is so, I mean, in my cohort, you know, of, 45 and beyond and all of that, you can't believe how many people are drinking that Kool-Aid and, you know, and going, it's Russia, it's Russia. I'm kind of like, don't you remember the Cold War? I mean, don't
right.
you remember, you know, historically McCarthy, you know, isn't like, you know, yelling, there's commie scare, and everyone went screaming out of the theater,
right.
you know, like these bad movies
right.
from the 50s, and, you know, where someone's landing on Earth from abroad that we're supposed to, you know, fear. And so, you know,
right.
all of these therapists who live by the cardinal rule that, you know, whatever's going on in the world, we should deal with our reaction to it and not target and scapegoat others for, you know, perceived problems and not judge. And then suddenly they're going, commie scare, because this was put out by
right.
the Democratic Party, who, you know, and the Clinton people, whom they see as their great saviors from, you know, the Hitler reincarnate that is Trump,
right.
you know.
Right.
And it's
right.
just, I mean, I hear that constantly, and
right.
even people say, well, yes, what the DNC said, you know, what was uncovered in the DNC might be true, but the Russian thing can be true, too. It's like...
Yeah, and that's a bigger
and no
deal,
one's,
apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like people keep trying to say, like, that's the major story, you know. And, I mean, if that's such a big deal, why aren't we hearing about the U.S.'s attempts to fight back this election engineering? Of course, most people I've spoken to actually say, or I've heard, sorry, most people who are informed on this stuff, I've spoken to have said that there's no real evidence that they prefer Trump. And, in fact, there was a general, this is really interesting, Joy Reid from Morning AM, from AM Joy. She had a panel on, including Carl Paladino, who was a terrible person and is a Trump supporter. But she was making fun of him for being like a friend of Putin. And again, you know what? Honestly, like, if you need to go through Russia connections to smear Donald Trump and his supporters, like, you're doing it wrong. Like, this guy is the bottomless pit of like self-incriminations and like dirty, you know, horrible evidence of wrongdoing, and you're gonna go like, you're like, oh, why? Let's not focus on the stuff we actually know is true. Like, let's throw that. Why not? Let's just make something up or have a theory that's like tenuous at best. Let's focus on that. What's wrong?
Well, because
with you
they're trying
the
to.
Go?
they're trying to suppress the DNC. They're trying, it's news cycle tug of war. You know, you put out this truth about what went down there, and we're going to come up with a story to distract attention and put a counter spin on it, and we're standing poised and ready to do it. Of course, the great irony is that in the recent WikiLeaks dump, you know, the October surprise of the weekend, and now there's more coming today, you know, one of the big stories of that is of the sale of, you know, something like a fifth of the uranium capacity of the United States, which, of course, is used for nuclear energy, nuclear warheads. It's like, you know, the most dangerous stuff that we have, you know, that we have going, whether it's used, i.e. benignly, supposedly, for power, or, you know, malignantly for, you know, for as a war threat, is sold to this big devil, our enemy Russia. It's sold with the imprimatur of the, you know, under, at the time that Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State, with her imprimatur, and then, of course, it turns out that the very organization, the company who bought this uranium, is making multi-year, multi-million dollar donations, you know, to the Clinton Foundation, which were supposed to have been disclosed to the president and were not. And then the, you know, recently leaked emails, which were, you know, the emails of John Podesta, the campaign manager and sort of central figure and mastermind of the Clinton advice group and campaign and all the rest of it, you know, their emails revealing the backstage collusion in, you know, and that is, you know, it's singularly probably the most telling group, you know, of emails, although there's some other good stuff, which I want us to get into too. But here's the irony. You're going, you know, the Russians are coming. The Russians are trying to control our election. This is used as the rationale to set up Homeland Security election infrastructure so that, guess what, the Obama administration can control the outcome of the election, potentially. You know, and it's all because of, you know, we're protecting ourselves for the Russians while we're selling them the most deadly substance and, by the way, profiting from it personally. And that also goes to something else in the WikiLeaks, which is Clinton's statement, you know, I have basically, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something to the effect of, and this was in a Goldman Sachs speech, which we're finally now seeing through the revelations, and she's basically saying, you know, there's one story for the public and there's another story for the, you know, the private industry people that I'm talking to, like the banks and these various industries and you guys, you know, and I'm telling two different tales. So, you know, the public is getting the Russia scare. And, you know, privately behind the scenes, it's all about how can we do business and profit, you know, through policy positions or nuclear sales or whatever it might be, or fracking or whatever, that is not in the public interest, that is not in the environmental interest. We're getting a split story. And, of course, even though people will say, you know, well, all politicians, you know, are two-faced or whatever, you know, the if there was a single issue in the, you know, the high unfavorables of Clinton, it is certainly the sense that she is inauthentic, two-faced, and outright lying, you know. You know, that's what, that's, you know, if it weren't for the boogeyman over here, you know, more, it wouldn't just be a certain, you know, group that is very, you know, determined in their distrust for that. But here is more evidence, you know, of it. I mean, that goes to the trust issue. Like, given, you know, there's like a kind of a rot in the trust issue, and you know, all of these leaks are more confirmation, you know, so I can understand why the Clinton group doesn't like them or the Obamas, you know, want to criticize or say Russia, but are they actually, can they win? Are they winning? Are they winning and misleading people in that battle over what's real and what we can trust?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Like, Matt Iglesias, who's a big Hillary supporter, wrote something in defense of Hillary that said, Hillary Clinton, the WikiLeaks proved that Hillary Clinton is exactly what we thought she was, or exactly what we knew she was, and kind of downplaying it. And I kind of think that, ironically, like, that's true. I mean, to her critics, she's exactly what we think she was also. And I guess I'm not, I find the stuff about, like, the public and private, I get it, and it's disturbing. I guess I don't find it as useful because it is something that I think so many politicians say, think, or do. I mean, you could argue that it's a bit of a, it's like a lack of accountability that lets her even say that. You could say that. I mean, I think that's a fair argument. I'm a little disappointed because it's funny. It's like we knew so much about this already that it's almost disappointing that it's not more incriminating. It is incriminating, but I wanted, like, more concrete things. And it's kind of a sad statement that speaks more to the fact that there was already so much evidence about this in terms of collusion, media collusion. I think that, you know, the Russia stuff is really – this is, like, an election that – really has exposed people and, like, revealed people's types of thinking and ways of seeing things. And the Russia stuff is just so disturbing to me, as if we're so – people really expect us to be simplistic enough to just hear this theory about Russians, and then all of a sudden that's kind of the – you know, it's very Manichaean, or, you know, the Russians are bad, the Americans are good. I'm on a listserv, and I couldn't believe it. Someone wrote something about this, and, you know, someone basically came in and was like, well, no, remember, this is all about the Russians. And it was just shocking. I mean, these are people in their 30s. I couldn't believe it. I think on younger people, it's working less. I think, I mean, I also think on this is a person who is a very Clinton-friendly person. But it is weird. I mean, it's really weird. I feel like it's like I'm getting a tenth of what people. Well, no, I don't want to say that because I don't want to trivialize the Red Scare. But I'm seeing the kind of stupidity and, like, groupthink that happened must have happened during the McCarthy era. Just this total, you know, us against them. And it's just really weird and disturbing. I mean, because apparently, in theory, these people are, you know, liberals, and I mean, we can say what we want to about, you know, liberals and the left, and I'm all for that distinction, actually. But even liberals, even, like, you know, centrist liberals who are supposed to embrace reason, that's what kills me, is the lack of. I mean, I'm used to being able to, and it's funny, in some ways, I feel like I'm closer to conservatives during this election because. They don't, even if they're, I mean, most of them don't like Trump, but because they're not so, I guess, indebted to Clinton, there's an honesty, and I'm not over romanticizing conservatives, but has it been so hard to just kind of have an intellectually honest discussion with liberals.
I have a question for you about that because, you know, there one of the things that, I mean, there are multiple generations and, you know, you and I represent, you know, multiple generations of liberals. So for my generation, there's kind of like, you know, yay, we were liberals back in the day and, you know, we still believe Paul Krugman or, you know, whomever, we're still loyal to these NPR, you know, and our original sources and, oh, it's a bad news to find out that, you know, they have changed. It's a bad news to find out that the Democratic Party and the Democratic elected officials that we found so, you know, charming and trustworthy were actually, you know, setting the stage you know, introducing neoliberal policies. And a lot of people, you know, there are many people who are aware of it and many, many more people who are not. And, you know, the word Democrat and the yay, we're the Democrats, it doesn't mean what it meant back in the day, you know, for that generation. Whereas for the people you're talking about, it's more like these are young, you know, social liberals who come along at this time, but the neoliberal philosophy of, you know, we do what we have to do to survive in a tighter, you know, and more challenging economy where you, you know, have to be more, you know, kind of focused and driven to be successful and to survive, you know, and so these other niceties kind of get, you know, sort of are trimmed back because we don't have time for them. So this is more like of a, perhaps, I mean, I don't know. Is this your perception? More of a kind of born into neoliberalism generation, and you know, is that an explanation for what you're reporting in terms of you know, the value sets, or is it just, you know, is it just kind of expediency, or, you know?
I don't think that people my age are worse on this issue. I mean, I'm trying to think about it. I guess my point in bringing that up with the woman saying that who's liberal is more that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think it depends on the, I mean, I'm talking about people who are already within this very pro-Clinton mindset. I think that there's also that what we have is a kind of nice apolitical, like it used to be only the, I mean, I'm like old school. My family is very radical and left, and, you know, we didn't like, liberal was like too centrist a word, you know, and people are like, it's a double, it's a dirty word. It's like, yeah, it's dirty because it's like, means nothing. And way too status quo, content and everything. But I think what's great about Sanders is that it is this sense of like, you don't have to have this, you don't have to be a Marxist. I mean, I have probably some Marxian analysis, but like I, you know, a class stuff, but you don't have to be that to kind of be against the status quo and against the system. And so it kind of makes a nice big tent for people who are upset about this stuff. So I do think that there's a, like, you know, people love crapping on millennials. You're not doing that, but there are so many people love doing that.
No, I don't do that at all.
That's why I said that, because I didn't want to sound like I thought you were doing that. But, you know, I think that there's something, I think that young kids are like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess the neoliberalism thing is just, it's one of those things that like cuts across, just like the TPP, right? Where there are people who are on the left and on the right who oppose it.
Yes, that's right.
But
yes. So that's maybe that's what you're more of what you're reporting. That makes sense. You know,
I mean, I think that when people get more liberal, so I think that there's a socially liberal. Being a socially liberal person is important. Civil rights are important. Quality
right.
is important, sensitivity, not being homophobic, not, all this stuff is important. But I do think maybe that what you're seeing is that there's that's not accompanied by, in other words, before it was kind of like, you know, there was a nice lineup. And there still is to some extent. It's like between social and socially conservative and fiscally conservative. I think you're probably getting more of people who call themselves socially liberal and fiscally conservative.
Yes.
Than you did before, just because tolerance is, you know, that much bigger and higher. That just makes sense, right? We get more and more tolerant or accepting. And of course people make inroads, you know, and you know, there are many more gay Wall Street bankers than there used to be, or black Wall Street bankers, or hedge fund managers or whatever. And that's, you know, there's a lot of talk about the making a more diverse top 1%.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting. I think what we're talking about here is, you know, the domestic issues of tolerance, which were, you know, in full display at the Democratic National Convention, which
right.
I know you attended and I attended, and you know, and it was all about that. It was like a courtship based on that.
Right.
And in fact, recently a friend of mine said, well, you know, I have grandchildren of color, you know, I have, you know, LGBTB, you know, member of my family, you know, my sister or whatever, and you know, so it's clear for me. That is like my bottom
right.
line. I don't want these people hurt. They feel like they're
right.
at, you know, at risk under
right.
a Trump presidency. And what goes on systemically in terms of climate, fracking, the TPP,
right.
Money in politics, you know, you can't, and all these other issues where, you know, you can say on some of them Trump would be worse. On a few, he might perhaps be better if he were not so inconsistent. But in any
right.
case, even though Clinton may talk a better game, you have this, you
right.
know, sort of stale, slow incrementalism that will kind of allow this constant move to the right with corporate overrule, either directly by the TPP or sort of gradualistically as has been occurring. And that is kind of more beyond their ken, and they're so, like, terrified, understandably,
right.
And there have been so many incidents, you know, that, you know, bring this to public notice and trigger people psychologically that, you know, we don't have a choice, and it's kind of like if we behead this one demon, we'll have the breathing room, hopefully, to address these other problems. And, you know, what further left people are saying is, but we won't get there under this tightly managed, hardening structure of systemic neoliberalism. And so that's,
right.
those are kind of the split. And, you know, one of the things that I've been, like, writing about recently is that I think people, and this goes to you, who really looks in careful detail at Donald Trump and what he says and what his positions are, and me, who ignores them. And in both cases, for opposite reasons, we're not there. We don't want to elect him. We think he'd be
right.
terrible. But we're not, like, in a constant panic that he will be elected, and that, you know, that drives all of our other thinking and decision-making down to this sort of protecting my loved ones, protecting the people
right.
I care about who would be a target of his, you know, or myself who would be a target of his as a woman or whatever. You know, that is not what's in the driver's seat for the election decision as it is for so many people. And I think that's part of it, too. It's kind of simplistic. If we solve that problem, you know, we defeat him, the world will be bright again, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, that's
I
not
mean, you
my
could
perception.
Easily say, right. I mean, I think that, like, you could easily say that I had a live show and Liza Featherstone and Doug Henwood were on.
Mm-hmm.
They're both writers. And they happened to be married, so it was a cute
mm-hmm.
little thing to have them together. And I raised, you know, I asked a question about whether Hillary could, I mean, I could see Hillary being more hawkish than Trump. I could.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him being reckless. I could see him, like, getting us into trouble in a way that, I mean, Hillary, obviously, I think Hillary and Obama do that too, but maybe in a worse way. I definitely see him, like, violating the Geneva Conventions, all that stuff, but you know, for better or for worse, Hillary is pretty hawkish, and I think it's fine for people, and I think it's healthy and self-protective, self-preservation to not want to vote for someone who you feel like is going to make life worse for you and your family, but it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, we should also be thinking about people of color abroad who we kill.
Mm-hmm.
People of color who suffer more because of, you know, because of environmental
mm-hmm.
racism, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
It is a luxury for me. Like, I walk down the street and I don't feel like,
right,
you know, as much of at risk.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's kind of like, okay, we have to have a more, like, a, I mean, it's, we, if you want to call yourself progressive, and
mm-hmm.
or liberal or a world citizen. No, most people don't. But if you want to be, you know, being progressive or liberal means that it's not just about issues that affect you directly. That's actually what conservative is. They wouldn't say that, but I think it's pretty, like, pretty much in a nutshell. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's, I don't know. We have to make, you know, the I don't know. I was going to say something, but I was like, that's never going to happen. I was going to say we have to make politicians, you know, be responsive on both levels. But there's definitely been, I mean, we saw with Clinton when she made that speech, which was a dig at Sanders, saying, oh, is breaking up the banks going to end racism? No. A really stupid mocking of, you know, this total exaggeration of Sanders as this, like, class analysis reductionist, which he wasn't. But, you know, of course, the
right.
irony is, you know what, like, financial regulation does affect people of color. You can just look at who suffered the most during the housing crisis, right? I mean, it's like,
and
it's a no-brainer.
Always. And women,
yeah.
You know, So it's not only just a boor who's, you know, sexually predatory, which is offensive and impossible, but any measure of the, you know, economic decline and environmental degradation is going to hit people of color, poor people, women, you know, more heavily than anyone else. I mean, that's
of course,
just been proven over and over. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the same thing with military stuff. I'm like, it's not that deep. Again, like, the more war, the more people die. That also affects women and children more than men. I mean, all these issues, like the minimum wage, which we just saw that Hillary's person was opposed to, which we already knew from that pathetic. Oh, if anyone wants to see the difference between Sanders and Clinton, watch the Democratic Platform Committee hearings. Meetings. It just, I mean, it's phenomenal. These people who fought so hard, tooth and nail, against strong language against the TPP, strong language against strong language for a minimum wage of $15 an hour. You know, these, and then they say, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just symbolism. It's like, okay, well, if that's true, then why? It's even weirder that they would fight so hard against it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's in a way I feel, and, you know, this is a minor point, but I feel that Sanders, you know, trying to wrest victory from the jaws of defeat, you know, has made this case that, this is the most progressive platform in history. But if you actually look at the slim attainments of the platform, the fact that they even were given the place to have the discussion, you know, really results in exactly what you're describing. I've done two articles on that platform. From the energy and environmental perspective, it's not all that impressive. And in fact, what you see, which the people who say, well, we'll elect Clinton, then we'll push her. What we see in the platform meetings is this extremely tight, locked down, loyalist organization and tight, rigid system of management that really does not permit of a lot of wiggle room. I mean, you know, it's a sad fact. You know, let's just briefly, because we're coming down to, you know, the final 5 minutes or so of the show, but let's just, you know, kind of consider briefly a bit, you know, one of these questions which once would have been, you know, considered way beyond the pale, much like the fact that, you know, the DNC was conspiring against the Sanders campaign until, of course, the WikiLeaks showed that was the case. And that is the question of, was Donald Trump and his rise and ascendancy in this campaign just a kind of mere coincidence, the result of media ratings, the media put him on to help their ratings and, you know, oh, we can't control them, and they were so unwise to do that, and now we're reaping the horrible whirlwind of this in this, you know, campaign between two negatives, that, you know, what many people feel are two negatives that is going on. Or, you know, was there some contrivance, and one, you know, in its coming about that he became the nominee, and specifically, was it a strategy, you know, this in this recent batch of WikiLeaks, it's revealed that it was indeed a strategy of the Clinton campaign to support and to get its extremely close relationship and influence on the media to support and promote what they called a Pied Piper Republican candidate. In other words, a kind of maverick outlier. Do you think it's, you know, is it more, with those revelations, is it more feasible and less tin hat to consider that it may have been, you know, the Clintons may have played some, you know, not quite benign role in the fact that we now have Donald Trump to contend with so many people in such terror over his possible election?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what, I mean, I think it's pretty undeniable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that the Democrats, I mean, what did it say? They talked about the Pied Piper, right? I mean, they were referring to Donald Trump.
They said there were three Pied Piper candidates. I think Rand Paul was one.
Cruz,
you know, in other words,
I
they don't want
Cruz,
a more mainstream
Ben
Republican.
Carson. Right. Cruz,
yeah.
Carson and him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they talk about the phone call that that happened between Bill Clinton and Trump. I don't know if that's true or not, but I mean, I think it's like obvious that there was something, you know, the Democrats were invested in someone that they thought would be too extreme.
Mm-hmm. And who makes, through his very bigotry and misogyny, would make a, you know, this more socially, domestically tolerant woman candidate, you know, it's a perfect foil in a way. And also in the newest batch, you know, the very last batch of today, just recently, and of course the journalists and all of us haven't really poured through them thoroughly yet because they were just recently released just tonight. You know, there's a lot of revelation about the very tight relationships that the Clinton campaign had with all of the signature journalists that, you know, one could possibly
right.
think of, who would be eagerly, you know, eager to help and you know, and put stuff out there on their behalf. And, you know, to devote, and you know, these are the front-end people, the on-camera personalities, but, of course, there are also, you know, the backstage executives and all the rest of it, and actually the network, you know, corporate leaders, and all that are part of that circle, you know. So if you see very tightly orchestrated and managed administrative style, you know, was this one thing, you know, the ascendancy of Donald Trump, was that just a spontaneous happenstance? You know, seems more and more unlikely. But do
right.
people, are people ready to look at that? Are people ready to, you know, from your, like, conversations?
I mean,
and
I think some people are, but I also think, like, I almost think it doesn't matter, because I think that even if it, like, it's so often the case that things that are conspiracy happen
mm-hmm.
in a more, like, evolutionary way, almost, like
uh-huh.
natural selection. So the conditions are there, and even if it's, like, not, I mean, I think, obviously, look, the fact that they said that they wanted a Pied Piper candidate nominee is pretty telling.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost think that the whole thing, I mean, it's funny. The Clintons actually, like, because they're so hands-on and they're so brazen, I mean, and it's so funny to watch a debate and nod along to a lot of the things that Trump is saying. I mean, that's a very weird feeling. But I was thinking the other day when he talked about Loretta Lynch with the plane,
mm-hmm.
you know, the FBI, how he got on their plane. It's weird. Who the hell does that? And you know what? I don't even care if there was improper communication. I find it unlikely that they were just talking about their grandkids. But if that's the case, don't be stupid. What do you expect people to say when they see that?
Right.
And
you
don't care. You
don't
Attorney
kind of
General.
Care.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
the thing. I mean, that's why they're so. I mean, I go back and forth. I'm like, who cares about the stuff? And it's true. There are certain things that people don't care about, but. Just don't like throw it in people's faces. I mean, I find Bill Clinton much more. I feel they're very pathological, and of course, I'm going to be called sexist for saying that. I think probably most people in politics that high up are pathological on some level, but their relationship. I mean, come on, like the reason I like her more than him, or dislike her less than I dislike him, is I actually feel bad for her because he's done such awful stuff. So is she, but he put the family through a lot. Through his,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, like, have an affair like a normal person, not with an intern in the Oval Office.
Right, right.
You know?
I mean, yeah.
And again, I don't care about the normal, it's just like, that's so, I mean, I don't care about that. I thought it was ridiculous. And it's so funny, because I have to say, like, you know, the left, you know, Bill Clinton used to be the liberal in the equation, because it was Clinton or what? I mean, Jerry Brown, I guess, and Jesse Jackson, they were better, but, you know, much better. But Clinton was president, and it was him against Newt Gingrich. And it was like, you know, nothing makes people more appealing than having terrible people go after them.
Right. So actually that becomes like a roadmap. That's a really great historical reference there, Katie. I really, yeah.
Thanks.
Right.
But it can be dangerous, because that used to be, in other words, we were all gathered around the Clintons. In the 90s, I mean, I was a kid, but I was very precocious and politically active. But, you know, everyone, I defended them. Everyone did, because of
yep,
the
sure I did.
Right-wing
mm-hmm.
vitriol, right?
Right. It's none of your business. It's between them.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, though, then we get kind of out of the bunker, and we realize, you know, there's a lot of slut-shaming that happened to, I actually spoke to Juanita Broderick, which is a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who accused Bill Clinton of rape. And that's a really important, fascinating story, because, of course, it complicates the feminist mantra of believe women, which takes kind of as, like, the default is you believe the women. And then you see people saying things. I mean, a lot of feminists, and I'm a feminist, I'm a total feminist, which is why I'm disgusted by a lot of what feminists are doing. But you see these so-called feminists, like, slut-shaming Monica Lewinsky, victim-doubting, victim-shaming Juanita Broderick in ways that they just would never do if the person being accused weren't married to the woman who, you know, the person who will become the first female president.
Right. I mean, that's the whole, exactly. I mean, that whole thing, I haven't gone down that road, but there's a level of kind of contrivance and inauthenticity. And also, if if it's perceived that, you know, there's basically, this is kind of a political marriage of two people and a kind of with a dynamic primary to it. And then people meet other needs in other ways or whatever. You know, that's kind of your business. So to give people that privacy and their right to their privacy, you know, but it certainly, it does come off really strange, you know, because, you know, rumors about the behavior persist, et cetera, and we know that these kinds of powerful men, just the kinds, you know, that Trump himself is and describes, and, you know, Bill Clinton falls into that rubric, too, you know, and they do the kind of behaviors, and so there is this hypocrisy in all of that, and a kind of, you know, so there you're giving people a kind of pass, and then it's kind of coming back and biting. Anyway, we have to wrap up the conversation, but we could have, you know, I love talking to you.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
You know,
when
love it.
Air?
We're going to do the wrap up and then we'll talk. Thank you.
I just want to announce something that's happening on October 19th.
Yes, that'll be perfect. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So on October 19th, we're having on October 19th, we're doing a live taping of my radio show at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic, 7 p.m. And our guest, it's going to be a few guests, but Corey Robin is going to be one of the guests, who's a really great thinker, intellectual, activist, academic, who writes a lot about the conservative movement and this election, too. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, that's going to be a fun thing. I'm going to come to that. That sounds fabulous.
Oh, great,
well, thank you. And people can find you on your website, katiehalper.com, KATIEHALPER.com, and, you know, wonderful writing
and
links to all your stuff,
thanks.
Radio show, and then the radio show. How do we find that?
And that's the Katie Halper Show Wednesdays at 7 p.m., and it's also on SoundCloud and iTunes. And then my Twitter is KT Halps. So that's the letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S.
And definitely worth a follow because the kind of wit and humor that we've been enjoying, you know, hearing from you today and everything is, you know, it's all over Twitter. And I'm frequently, like, at the end of a long day of slogging through the horror of whatever's going on in the news every day that we're witnessing and bearing witness to and reporting on, you know, I'll frequently turn to Katie's Twitter in order to, you know, kind of lighten up and laugh. And it's fantastic the way you are able to, you know, do all of that. Thank you so much for being with us today and Connect the Dots, Katie
so much
Halper.
For having me.
Yeah, super fun.
Thanks, Alison.
Yeah, sure. And thank you, listeners. Come back next week for the next edition of Connect the Dots. If you like this show, share it with your friends. Like us on iTunes. Look for us in the Connect the Dots Podbeam archives to listen to past shows and turn your friends on to our current shows. And have a great week. Be well. I'm Alison Rose Levy for Connect the Dots.